Thank you. Thank you, Brandon. Can everybody hear me? Excellent. I tend to be soft-spoken, so if I tend to wave down, just raise your hand, let me know, and I'll start speaking up again. I'm going to go through this very quickly because, you know, we have a very, very aggressive agenda today. And Lucian has some, I think, some important points to talk about some of the lessons learned from some various programs that we've been on, and then go through the other information that we need to convey. We did an analysis as part of the DRM strategy, the types of repositories that people generally build. There's repeating patterns. When people go off and build databases, they build them around certain form, fits, and functions. Types of services that we also did analysis of the types of services that architects generally should provide as they're working through and building out an information sharing pattern. This is the basic diagram, four quadrant charts. There's basically transactional databases. There's analytical databases. They're also structured along the axis or the dimension of whether they're document-oriented or structurally oriented. Our structured relational databases, for example, information is contained within the structure of the database. If you get a drop a table out of a person table out of a structured relational database, all you get is a list. The meaning comes out of the queries that you pose to the database. Conversely, when you talk about document-oriented or these sort of object-oriented databases, the information is contained within the object. So we decompose the problem that way, and then we pose that there were a series of services that one should provide along the list of as you architects are building these information sharing platforms. Very simply, it comes down to how do you search it, how do you retrieve it, how do you subscribe to it, and how do you notify. And then how do you mediate? If you had to summarize it as those sort of things, that's what you're trying to figure out. You're trying to figure out how do you make it accessible. You're trying to figure out how are you going to make it findable. You're trying to figure out how you're going to pass it around. If you look at the way that we're building databases or building systems today, what you find is we're all built around the enclave concepts. It all came up from, you know, original organizational lands became directorate lands became agency lands, and so on and so forth. It's a slow period of aggregation around how we built these things. And the effect of it is that each organization we look at has the entire application stack built inside of their own network enclaves, and they manage at the boundary. They build DMZs, they build sets of services that they expose certain capabilities out to the rest of the network. What we find, though, is that poses, as while it solves a problem inside, it causes for a collective organization. Because then what you happen is typically the way people transfer information is do bulk transfer among the enclaves. Drop a bunch of information from one place to another, and then it gets slurped into another database and accessed, and then you got to do all the mediation for semantics and nexus such as that. An emerging view. Because what we do is you focus on provisioning our data. Doesn't mean we stop building portals. Doesn't mean we stop building applications underneath those portals. We don't stop building data repositories. But what we do is when we build databases, we build them with a mind to share. That there are certain capabilities, again, going back to search, subscribe, notify, retrieve, that we want to be able to provision as we're building databases so they become accessible. And this is where this work becomes important. Because what we're trying to find, if this is going to happen, we have to find the canonical representation of the information that we're going to share in terms of context, in terms of structure, and so on, so it becomes shareable. So it's okay to provision a search service. It's okay to provision a retrieval service. It's okay to provision some of these mediation services. But unless there's that common lexicon, that common way that we address how we, in an understandable way, in a semantic way, we can't make these services work as we would envision them to work. The way ahead, there are certain things that we see. There's basic sets of context. So as we're building out our ontological representations, there are certain things that we care about as a first step. We care about stewardship assignments. Who owns the data? Or who has control of the data? Entities of interest. What are the common things that we all care about in terms of person, organization, things like that? Subject areas of interest. For intelligence community, for example, counterterrorism is a subject area of interest. We care about that. We want a common taxonomy around that. We want a common ontology around that. And then sources of record, sources of reference, and the access management policy. Contents, the actual data within the repository, the thing you provision services against, and then the structure description. I'm not going to go spend a lot of time on this, but to say that we have to treat a small number, we have to get to something that stewards understand in terms of provisioning access control. There are a small number of policies that you can invoke or pursue as essentially a policy buckets that you can give to stewards so they can make decisions about their information. And I think in context, if you want to apply rules in general for most of our context information that describes our data, we want to think about provisioning services that makes that context information shareable, findable, searchable, retrievable. Again, goes back to why this work is important, because this is the first step in trying to start talking about the ontological representation of the data. And the content information, again, it depends on the DRM quadrant is how you provision access to that. There's the access management rules, and here's where security and privacy come important. And then structure, it generally follows content. We have to think about, in addition to how we represent data, we also think about the services that need to provision that information for access and discovery. Again, I'm not going to spend a long time on this chart, but there's a couple points that I want to emphasize. As well as our representation of information, we have to think about the things that enable services. They are canonical representations of the services themselves. How do we actually make federated search service and identities? How do we represent ourselves to the service so it can unambiguously identify us as ourselves or as a service unambiguously as itself? So as we proceed down this path, we have to think about how we're going to do that, because in large federated environments, that's going to become critical. The other thing I'm going to say is that don't forget your governance. This is one of the things that outcome of the DRM activity. It became built, written up as part of the management strategy. We're a little bit ahead right now. When I say this work should happen, but understand when we say DRM 3.0, we're casting it as a thing that could be done. We have to get the apparatus within the OMB, within the governance construct that stood under OMB to get into the language, buy into it, and then let's move forward. But right now we're not quite at that point. So let's be judicious about how we use the term DRM 3.0. It's something we want to achieve, but it's something we also have to move forward or sell into the overall governance construct, because eventually we want this to become policy. Follow me? If we have to get the language, we have to get their buy-in, we have to get their cognizance of this so that we can move forward in terms of building this into federal policy. We need to forward the linkages between these various components. So with that said, I'll turn it back over to Lucian to talk about some of these core concepts.
Okay, thank you, Brian. So So there's a lot of thinking that went into the DRM 2.0, and the picture we had here was a good one, but there were some challenges with it. The current approaches for data sharing require an awful lot of human intervention, and considering the massive amount of data that is available and the diversity of that data, that's really a bit too expensive. Maybe it's not really... A lot too expensive, maybe it's really impossible to do all by hand. Right now, we've made progress, so we can do a lot of matching with the XML tags, but we don't really, we have a good way to think about it, but not a good way, it would seem, to handle it. Okay, so we thought that we ought to, at the meeting, yes. I'm on slide five. It says current challenges. So we need to think ahead about where we can, some more about the how to enable people to really start moving. And we have some different ways of doing it. So I'm going to point to a couple of technical issues here which shown up. I took this out of the DRM 2.0, and you notice that there's a thing here called topic. And the way to think of it right now is that you have a word which is then associated in some way with the data asset. A word is associated with a taxonomy. And what's DRM said? Well, When I wrote the language for that section, I made it a little stronger so that you could do more, and we'll show you that in a minute. Now, data description said that you should have syntax and you should have semantics, which is good, but here this sounds, looks like your old entity relationship model from 1976. Is there more that can be done? Well, actually, now we're going to see that there's a lot more that can be done. And so these are areas where we can come up with a better way of doing things that's more general. For example, one of the problems there in that data description is that we've made a distinction between an entity and an attribute. Well, Sham Nivathi was one of the co-authors of a computer surveys article in the mid-80s, which showed that in some databases, an entity can be an attribute. So you don't have a clear distinction there. That's nice. In 1991, Sigmod, somebody showed pivoting, which allows a database which has attributes in one model to have them represented as values in another and vice versa. Okay, so we have this problem where although supposedly there's an entity and an attribute and a value, an entity can be an attribute, can be a value, can be an attribute, can be an entity. So it's really not a very sound basis for doing anything. This brings us to there's a technical barrier of schema mismatch, and we're not really going to be able to do much in terms of data sharing unless we've got a systematic way of attaching schema mismatch, which we now have, I believe. Also, there was no necessary relationship between the data description and the data context, and because the context seemed to be very linguistic, as we'll see later, now there can be. We have to be able to provide for dynamic schemas. There was a Ned Beatty who said he would call in. I'm not sure if you're on the phone, but those in the NRC are familiar with the data collections generated by ANSYS and NASTRAN runs, which analyze nuclear power plants. These are very definitely structured data, but the schema is dynamic, and so we have to be able to deal with that too. It's not in the data reference model as it is now. It's still lunked under unstructured. Now with SOA, I bring that up because if we're going to be able to share data, we have to have a good way of representing it and to be able to reason whether the data that's provided by one service is actually what we need or whether it has to be reprocessed in some way. If we had a formal way of making those requests, then we'd actually be building services with inside our SOA, which could do more than just match words. And I think we can. Context is another battle. It's a little bit too complicated to go into, but basically it's hard to do context because there is a lot of ambiguity in the English language. Now, the way that we said we were going to handle context in DRM is to have taxonomies, and then there were terms or words associated with that. Well, that's very good, but we still have to deal with a great big problem of type 1 and type 2 errors that show up in the search engines as documents you don't want and documents you did want but didn't get. Now, there's a standard now, which I bring out here, it's the latent tertiary allocation. The IR community has found a means of coming up with an automated way to essentially find it's sort of like the 80-20 principle, a kind of a principal vectors approach where they can find automatically the best characterization of a set of documents. But it's only 95% good as their gold standard, which is called the retrieval model where you put in your query and then you take the terms from the documents collected and put it in again. But what it means is that for the unambiguated word space, we've really reached the limit of what we're going to be able to deal with. So we have to look beyond search engines that deal just in the word space and move to a more semantic space. Now, how do we do that? Well, if you look in 4.2.2, I put in a little thing that people might not have bothered to read, but it actually looks suspiciously like WordNet. And since I bought the book, Dr. Feldbaum, I think that I'm allowed to show a picture of it here. Here it is. And she commented to me one time, gee, you actually have read that book. I think that it's a very good book to read, and she'll be giving you a précis of some of the contents. It really clarifies a lot of things which are in a lot of debates now are left very fuzzy. Okay, what else is hidden in this thing? there's a lot of seeming very vague language about how one should do things in terms of doing data description, data context. And it would all seem vague and wishy-washy if it were not for the fact it's already been done. And it's been done very successfully. The Global Change Master Directory, which Lola Olson is going to discuss, has been doing data sharing for a very, very, very long time. And I think on her slide she says they now are describing up to 20 petabytes of data which can be shared. It's multiple agencies across the government, and they're civilian agencies, which means it's not a multi-billion dollar budget. It really can be done. And they have a very good model that I believe that we can look at and build upon. So I look ahead and I say it is possible to envision, and I say, you know, I agree with Brian that this is something to go towards rather than to announce. But we can envision right now a better way of doing everything, where we basically come up with a data resource awareness agent that can reason about our data collections, because we can finally feed it and know where we feed it. Now, here's a possible objection. Where's the miracle? Okay, because a lot of this depends upon advances which heretofore have not been known to have been taken. Well, many of them have been taken. I'd like to single out Dr. John Prangy here, who was the program manager for a number of very important R&D efforts over the last decade in the ARDA program. Carefully crafted programs and the excellent work done by a number of the researchers, three of whom are here today, Dr. Feldbaum, Dr. Whitbrock, and Dr. Prangy, we have technology and computer science which didn't exist and we didn't know about until recently. And then there's one more thing that I want to bring up. I'm sorry that Chris Welty is not here. He's on the phone. He was here. I promised to call this iChris, but because he's not here, I'm going to use my elementary Greek I took in college and call it Icris. And either way, the Icris project demonstrated knowledge interoperability. And what that the specific things that they brought out was that you can now express truths that are mathematical and truths that come from observation of the real world, which is called non-monotonic logic, in a uniform manner. It also showed that techniques that have been used by PsyCorp to represent the real world are interoperable with others, and processes described by PsyCorp are equivalent to processes described by OWL-S, which is the service ontology which doesn't exist yet. So we basically can do an awful lot now without fear of it being locked into something proprietary. And Language Computer Corporation will show how we can actually take large numbers of documents we have and actually extract the knowledge from them. This is something when I heard the program briefed back in 2004, I didn't believe it was going to happen. And the researchers in the program made me a believer. So I believe that we can put together language and logic in a way that heretofore has not been possible and that people have claimed couldn't be done. I draw your attention to this strange little comment on the bottom. It allows for a contrafactual conditional. This is the way we state a law of science. When it comes to the PsyCorp presentation, you will see an example of the contrafactual conditional. If you'd like to read more about it, there's this book. I own it. I've written the only review of it on Amazon.com, so I think they won't object to my having shown it here. So I'm saying that I believe we are in a situation where we can start to build towards a new model of the DRM, and we actually have a starting point with the Global Change Master Directory and its structure. So, and I hope that at the end of the morning, you will be as optimistic as I am. Okay, thank you.